Parshas Vayechi. It's the close of Sefer Bereishis, and it details the end of Yaakov Avinu's life as he's about to die. Today, I'd like to explore the end of the life of Yaakov Avinu and what it can teach us. The Parsha begins with the words, Vayechi Yaakov, and Yaakov lived. Why is it telling us that Yaakov lived if it's about to tell us the events of the end of his life? Shouldn't this phrase come after Yaakov's death as part of the summary? The Tzena Arena says that truly Yaakov should not have lived after he came down to Mitzrayim. He should have died then and there. And this should have been the summary pasuk. Yaakov had said in last week's parsha, Amusa hapam acharei ra'osi es panecha. I will die now after I have seen your face. So what kept Yaakov alive for another 17 years after he came down to Mitzrayim? The Tzena Arena quotes a pasuk of Mishlei to explain how this happened, that Yaakov lived in Mitzrayim. The pasuk in Mishlei says that a person gets life from giving tzedakah, but orach tzedakah chayim, in the path of tzedakah is life. The Tzena Arena states a principle that must be unpacked. He says that it is known that the longevity of a person's life is connected to a person's mazel. Some people are slated to have a long life, and some people are not. But what does this mean? It says in the Gemara in Shabbos, Ein mazel Yisrael, Jews are not controlled by mazel, which can be translated as fates or the horoscope, the astrology. When Hashem was making a treaty with Avram at the Brisbane of Bessarim, the pasuk says that Hashem took Avram outside. Rashi there says that he took him above the astrological symbols that controlled the rest of the world, as Avram's descendants would no longer be controlled by the stars. If this is the case, how does tzedakah help with mazel, which shouldn't exist in the first place? While all Jews are above mazel, they are not controlled by fate. This does not mean that Jews aren't subject to the laws of nature. Mazel here means that people have predispositions to certain conditions. Someone who has good genes, according to their mazel, will live longer. Someone who was born into a family with a family history of cancer is going to have a shorter life, and that's their mazel. A person born into poverty is going to have the impact of poverty impact their lifespan. We understand this to be the case, even though we don't couch it in terms of mazel, but that's what it means here. This mazel is determined by a person's life goals that Hashem has set for them at the beginning of their life, and that determines their lifespan. Even though a person's lifespan is set at the beginning of their life, there are ways to impact it, and Hashem can change that based on their behavior as a reward or punishment. When a Jew gives tzedakah, it impacts their lifespan. Their mazel changes. They're taken from being controlled by nature to having Hashem decide if they are worthy of life or death. There's a phrase, tzedakah tatzil mimaves. Tzedakah saves a person from death. Rabbeinu Bachai says in the Katekemach that a person isn't only saved from a tragic death by giving tzedakah, but even from death itself that would come at old age when it's time. Death can be delayed past the time when they should have died. Someone could have really poor prospects to live. They could have clogged arteries or stage 4 cancer, chas v'shalom, based on Hashem's plan that was set into place for them. But because they gave tzedakah, that plan is thrown out the window. There's a new plan for them. The Parsha tells us Vayechi Yaakov. Yaakov lived when he was not supposed to. He was supposed to die when he got down to Mitzrayim, and he lived another 17 years. Something else in Yaakov's life was 17 years. Yosef was 17 years old when he was sold into slavery, so that was the number of years Yaakov got to raise Yosef. The Tzena Arena connects what Yaakov did in those first 17 years to his life being prolonged for 17 years. The zechus of tzedakah that Yaakov had was that Yaakov supported Yosef for 17 years of his childhood. Supporting his own child for 17 years was considered a merit by which Hashem rewarded him, midza kenegan midza, in kind, that he lived for another 17 years where Yosef, the child he supported, could now support him. This is strange, and I don't have a good answer to a contradiction here. The Gemara teaches us that a father needs to support his child until he is 6 years old. After 6, it is a tzedakah, but the Beis Din can force him to pay for his family. So the length of the reward that Yaakov should have been entitled to should have only been 11 years, the years after Yosef was 6 years old. Here, the Tzena Arena, quoting Rabbeinu Bachai, says it was all 17 years, including the years of obligation. If anyone can resolve this contradiction, I would love to hear an explanation. But here's a lesson that I think we can take from the start of the Parsha and from this concept of 17 years of giving to Yosef gave Yaakov an additional 17 years life. In life, we have responsibilities to others, to our parents, to our spouses, to our kids. We have things we need to do because we're adults. We can't neglect our children just because we're not in the mood. We need to help our parents. We have things that we need to do to run the household. We have to work. What we do is still considered a kindness that we are doing for others, and we will be rewarded for fulfilling our responsibilities, midah keneged midah, as if it's above and beyond what we need to do. Even though it's a responsibility, we also have a choice how we do that responsibility. We can do something happily, or we can do it with resentment. To maximize our reward and to really have it be counted as chesed, we should do these responsibilities with joy, to add in the elements of tzedakah and chesed in a larger measure. We should do it from a sense of goodness rather than because we only need to. The Tzenna Rena continues looking at these first words of the Parsha, or actually at the spaces directly before these words in the Parsha. In general, the Torah differentiates between one Parsha to the next by leaving a minimum space of 9 letters between 2 Parshios. You see a break in the text, you know, okay, it's the next Parsha. In the Torah, there's no other punctuation, so these spaces are important. In between Vayigash and Vayechi, there's no space. This lack of space is called stuma, which means closed. The Tzenna Rena asks, what's the reason for this? And he gives a number of answers. First, when Yaakov Avinu died, the hearts and eyes of the Jewish people got stopped up. Things got rough for the Jewish people on an emotional and a practical level, and this is hinted to by the lack of space. What changed? As long as Yaakov Avinu was alive, there was no galus, no exile. Yes, the family lived in a foreign land, but the children of Yaakov were treated like royalty. They were honored and respected by the Mitzrayim. When Yaakov died, his children's prestige went down. Once all the Shvatim died, that's when the galus, the exile of Egypt, truly became oppressive. With Yaakov's death, it wasn't outright discrimination, but society was no longer pro-Bnei Yisrael like they had been. There were undercurrents of disrespect and hostility, which caused a catch in the throat and a feeling of unease. Another reason is not what happened to the Jews, but what happened to Yaakov. Yaakov himself got closed up. What was closed up? The Tzenna Rena, quoting Rashi, says that Yaakov wanted to reveal to his children what was the plan with a capital P. They were about to start a long and bitter galus that had been told to Avram at the Bris Bein HaBesarim, and they had a timeline that the exile in galus would end in 400 years. But after that, there was a long and painful future awaiting these people. The hardest part of hard times is not knowing when it's going to be over. What's this like? You go to the DMV, and the hardest part is not knowing when it's all going to be over. You get a number, but it's not clear when you're going to be called up. It could be 5 minutes, it could be 30 minutes, it could be an hour, it could be 3 hours. You have no way of knowing. If you knew going in that it would be 6 hours that you needed to sit there, in some ways that would be better than if it's an hour and you never know. You can prepare for it mentally. Yaakov wanted to tell his children when it would all end ultimately. When would Mashiach come? When is this everything going to become perfect? But when he came to do so at the end of his life, the Shekhinah closed up this information from him so he couldn't reveal to his children when was Mashiach coming, just like these parshios are closed. A third explanation from the Midrash, quoted by the Tzenna Rena and Rabbeinu Bachai, is that Yaakov looked at his sons and at their names to see their essence. And he saw, if he looked at the names of the Shvatim, Reuven, Shimon, Levi, there were two important letters missing from all of their names, and those are the letters Ches and Tes, which spell out Chet, which means sin. These children of his had no sin. So why shouldn't he tell them the future, as they were holy and deserved to know? Maybe it would help them to know when Mashiach would come. But then he noticed that there was the letters Kuf and Sadi, which spell out Kates, the end, were also missing from their names. And he realized that although his children had no sin, they were not meant to know what was the plan for the end. In this case, Hashem didn't stop Yaakov from revealing the end to his children. Yaakov Avinu himself knew the end, but he realized it wouldn't be helpful or appropriate for him to reveal this to his children. Perhaps part of the meaning of Yaakov's children not having ches and tes in their names, that they were living a life without sin, is that in order to live a life without sin, we also can't know the kuf tzadi. We can't know the end. We can't know the kates. Because then we will live a life of emuna, that Hashem is in charge even when things are tough. The pasuk then tells us, Vayikrevu yimei Yisrael lamus. And the days of Yisrael came close to dying. And so then he calls in Yosef to give him his final wishes. How did Yaakov know he was going to die? The Tzenna Rena tells us that Yaakov was very connected with his soul and with his body, and he felt the power of his body diminishing, and so he knew his end was near. So he calls in his son Yosef to set his affairs in order, and he made Yosef swear that Yosef would carry Yaakov's body to the land of Canaan after his death. The Tzenna Rena tells us that Rabbeinu Bachai looks at these psukim and notices a strange anomaly that might give us an understanding to what is our purpose in life. If we take this message to heart every day, we will definitely live life differently. The Pasuk seems to switch off between using the name Yaakov and the name Israel interchangeably. At the beginning of the Parsha, it says Yaakov lived, using the name Yaakov, and in the same Pasuk, it uses the name Israel. There must be a lesson here. The Tzenarana says that the names of Yaakov indicate what part of him is being emphasized. Yaakov Avinu was the synthesis of Ruchnius and Gashmius. Part of him was grounded in physicality, living on this earth, and part of him was connected to the spirituality of Hashem. When Yaakov slept on Har HaMoriah before he ran away to Lavan's house, the Pasuk says that he saw Sula Mutzav Arza V'Rosho Magia HaShemayimah. He saw a ladder standing on the ground, but his head reached toward the heavens. This was Yaakov Avinu. He was part of this world. He was connected to this world. He stood on this world, but he connected up to Hashem up until the point that his image was emblazoned on the throne of Hashem in heaven. So in these psukim, whenever it uses the name Yaakov, it is talking about the physical things that the body of Yaakov needed. The name Yaakov means heel, which is the part of the body most connected to the earth as it touches the dirt. In contrast, the name Yisrael signifies things that the soul desires. The name Yisrael comes from the word srara, dominion, which is how we refer to heavenly, spiritual things. When Yaakov came down to Mitzrayim, it calls him Yaakov, because he was only going there to keep his body alive, as there was no food in Eretz Canaan. So he couldn't stay there. So it says, Vayichi Yaakov, and Yaakov lived with the name Yaakov, which is talking about physical things, earthly concerns. But then now that Yaakov is about to die, and he's sick, and he needs to make plans for his neshama, which is about to leave his body and this world, and he's speaking about eternal things, he uses the word Yisrael, because he's talking about the Yisrael part of Yaakov, the spiritual component in him that is about to join up with Hashem. Who does Yaakov call when he realizes he needs to set his affairs in order? He calls Yosef. Why does he call him? Yosef is the second youngest. The Tzenarana reminds us that Reuven is the firstborn, so he should have been given the responsibility first. Then comes Yehuda, who's considered the political leader of the Shvatim at this time. Yehuda was the one who Yaakov sent down first to build Goshen with the yeshiva at its center. He's the internal leader of the sons of Yaakov. But that's not who Yaakov calls. He calls Yosef. Yosef may not be the leader of the brothers, but he's the leader of the country of Egypt. And what Yaakov needed now was someone to be the advocate for him with the external government who could get what he needed done. This is the role of a shtadlan, of a political lobbyist, and it has its place where there are religious needs under the control of a non-Jewish power. And it is very different than the role and choice of who leads internally. Yaakov knew that Yosef had the ability to get Yaakov's body to Eretz Canaan after his death, as this was a delicate diplomatic negotiation. Egyptians were not so ready to let Yaakov go. Once Yaakov had come down to Mitzrayim, there was no more famine. There were no more miscarriages. Life was so easy and there were no more tragedies. Yaakov became a living legend, and the Egyptians were not going to part with him or his body so easily. Yaakov said to Yosef, "Do a chesed ve'emes, do a true kindness, as I will never be able to pay you back, because after death, what can I do for you? What is the ultimate kindness? Don't bury me in Mitzrayim." In this request is another important lesson we can learn from the death of Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov forces Yosef's hand by making him swear so that Paro couldn't command Yosef to bury Yaakov in Mitzrayim, as it would go against this swear and he would respect this. So Yaakov forces Yosef to swear, and we need to understand why. There are two ways to look at this request. First, Yaakov didn't want to be buried in Egypt. And second, he wanted to be buried in the lands of Israel. Why did he not want to be buried in Egypt? One reason is that all the dust of Mitzrayim, where Yaakov would be buried if he were in the land of Egypt, would be turned into lice during the Makos. And Yaakov did not want his body experiencing that. Second, another reason, Yaakov didn't want to be turned into a deity and a good luck charm after his death. The Egyptians revered him, and they also worshipped idols. It wouldn't be a far cry for them to go from revering him to worshipping him. Rabbeinu Bechai explains why this was such a big deal to be turned into an idol. Hashem had promised that he would exact revenge on Mitzrayim and against their gods. So if Yaakov was one of their gods, what would be with him? Yaakov wanted Yosef to do everything in his power to avoid having Yaakov become subject to punishment. What's the lesson here? Kavod, honor, respect can very easily turn to infatuation, and we need to be wary of that, as the subject of the infatuation will be held accountable if the honor loses its connection to Hashem and a person becomes idolized. Those are the reasons why Yaakov didn't want to be buried in the land of Egypt. But there are also reasons why he wanted to be specifically buried in the lands of Israel. There is something uniquely special about the land of Israel. The land of Israel has a special power to cause sins to be forgiven of anyone who is buried there. Also, in the land of Israel, the gates where our tefillos go up to Shemayim, where our prayers ascend heavenward, is directly parallel to the place of the Beis HaMikdash. So, when a person is buried in Israel, there is a straighter path for their neshama to ascend up to heaven. Next, it's not just the land itself that has a power, but it's also the people who are buried there. Who is buried in Israel? The Avos, Yaakov Avinu's fathers and mothers, Avram and Sarah, Yitzchak and Rivka, Adam and Chava, and there is a special power to be buried near one's ancestors. Also, there's a special power to being buried near holy people. So Yaakov Avinu wanted to be buried in the land of Israel, so he would have access to these many reasons why the land of Israel has a level of holiness that impacts the body where and the neshama of where a person is buried. Yosef swears he's going to carry this out. So Yaakov then hears the news and he bows his head to the top of his bed. It seems strange that a sick man gets up to bow. Why did he do this? Yaakov just heard good news. He won't be punished by being in Mitzrayim when the Egyptians try to turn him into a god. And he will receive kapara, he will receive redemption for his sins by being buried inside of Eretz Yisrael. So he's happy. And what should a person do with their happiness? They turn to Hashem. So right now, where is Hashem's Shechina found? The Tzenna Rena says that the Shechina is found at the head of the bed of a sick person. So Yaakov Avinu, who is now sick, turns to the head of his bed to say thank you to Hashem. There's another fantastic explanation. Yaakov wasn't just happy about Yosef's agreement here, but Yosef's agreement signaled something else. It meant that all of Yaakov's children had stayed righteous, and he recognized that he was lucky. He knew that his grandfather, Avram Avinu, had a son, Yishmael, who turned evil. His own father, Yitzchak, had an evil son, Esav, and all of his descendants were evil. Only Yaakov did not have any children who left the path that he had hoped for them. And here, Yosef, who had so much potential to go astray, he had been a slave, and now he was surrounded by non-Jews, and he had so much power, he could have left the path of what was right. But he remained close to the Torah and to Hashem. And Yosef is helping him, and he sees a beautiful family. What could be a better reason to be grateful and to thank Hashem? So he didn't take his family for granted, and he thanks Hashem, who is the source of all this goodness. According to the Tzenna Rena, Yaakov is not just bowing down to Hashem. It is here that the story of Yosef comes full circle. It began in Parshas Vayeshev with the dreams of Yosef, in which he saw 11 stars, the sun and the moon bowing down to him, and others mocked him for these dreams. But Yaakov watched these dreams and knew they would come true. Now the dream is coming true. Yaakov bows down to Yosef to thank him and to show him respect for his position as the ruler over Egypt. Yaakov sits up in his bed. Although he was sick, he exerted the efforts. One of the explanations brought is that Yaakov wanted to show respect for Yosef's position as king, just like Moshe showed respect for Paro, even though he couldn't be harmed by him and Paro was an evil person. There is still an expectation of respect that a person needs to give based on the other person's status as a leader. The parsha then continues with the brachos that Yaakov gives to his sons and ends with the death of Yaakov and Yosef. From the few psukim in the beginning of the parsha that we discussed together, we learn about life and how to prepare for death. We learned that tzedakah can increase the length of our life, and even the responsibilities we have can be considered tzedakah, and we should always do them with joy. We learned that while Yaakov was going to reveal the plan for all of history, either he or Hashem stopped him from doing so, as it would not be the best for Yaakov's children and it would not stop them from sin. We learned that Yaakov is made up of two parts, a physical side and a spiritual side, as represented by the names of Yaakov and Yisrael. We, his children, have that balance in us too. While we can't neglect our bodies, Yaakov had come down to Mitzrayim to keep himself alive, our focus should be on our souls, how we are acting like the Bnei Yisrael, the sons of Israel. We also learned how different roles are important for different times. Most of the time, spiritual leadership, that of the Bechor or of Yehuda, is the priority. But when we need to interact with the government, there are different criteria, and those criteria and the people who represent the ability to interact with the government should be treated with respect. We also learned about the power of the lands of Israel and how burial in the lands of Israel has a special, unique strength and the benefits of being buried near the righteous and our ancestors. if we take these lessons that we learned from Yaakov Avinu as he's about to die, we will merit to become his successors who bear the name B'nai Yisrael, the children of Yisrael. Have a good Shabbos.